Welcome back, everybody, to the Untitled Esports Show. I believe this is episode number 6. My name is Gutex, and I am joined by my two favorite esports veterans. We got Zorin over here, and we got Slasher over here. Zorin is on the West Coast. Slasher is on the East Coast. We are bi-coastal each and every week.
Yo, we're doing it, bro.
We're doing it, bro. How are you guys today on this fine Tuesday evening, February 19th?
It's freaking cold. It's really cold in LA. I do not pay California rent for this weather, okay? Give me back my warm, sunny days. That is all I'm going to complain about. Everything else is great, though. Esports is great. Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning in again this week. We have so much to talk about.
We have so much to talk about. Slasher, are you freezing your balls off out there?
It is gotten back to cold again. Yeah, it kind of sucks, honestly. Like, we were doing so well. We had like 2 days of nice weather. It was like 45 or 50 degrees for the weekend, and that was like pretty good. And now we're back down to, I think, 20.
Oh my god, this is awful. Why are we talking about the weather? We've really sunk into being polite, breaking the ice right now.
Yeah. Why? You're doing fine.
Doing great.
Sure.
Doing fantastic.
Great. Yeah. Doing great. And you know what's doing great is the esports news of the week. So much stuff.
Yeah, because you're right on top of it. Yes. Our PogChamp leader is all over the esports news of the week.
Look it. Okay. We're all
doing How are you doing, Ryan? You're back in LA for a bit, right?
I'm losing my edge is what I'm doing.
We had a little pre-show thing. A little discussion with Ryan, yeah.
You want to talk about that?
No one cares. No one cares. But
are you sure?
The most important thing is that PogChamp fucking head blew off his skull, and that was the best part. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because you know what it was is because you said something to me. You said the sweetest words in the English language to me, Rod.
Which are?
You were right.
You were right.
Oh, yeah. I knew it. You know, one of these days, I'm going to start recording what happens pre-show because that is, like, it is gold. It is actually gold, the stuff that happens while we're setting up.
It's more entertaining than the actual show.
Really?
All right, well, let's talk about that.
No. We have a great show today. We have a great show.
Yes, enough. No, let's get into the topics.
As usual, everyone in the industry can't do things right most of the time, and they provide enough news for us for at least an hour and a half every week.
All right, so
there's no shortage.
Well, let's start with some good news. Some inspiring news. The esports, I would say, you guys correct me if I'm wrong, but the esports victory of the week goes to Arslan.
Yeah, I don't even know what you're picking.
Oh, I'm picking the Evo Japan winner of Tekken.
Oh, okay. I thought you were gonna go somewhere else with that. But yeah, yes,
me,
no, that's
me too. I was really thinking like four or five different ways that where Ryan could make this a hilarious joke. But I'm really glad you went with probably one of the best moments. Thank you, Ryan.
Absolutely.
For looking out for your people. Your fighting absolutely game. Absolutely.
I wish I had some of the video clips from earlier, but you guys can check the stream archives to find out about Arslan Ash 95, Tekken player from from Pakistan that flew all the way to Evo Japan and beat a Korean player in the grand finals. And if that wasn't enough, some of the Pakistani community posted about his travel woes because Arslan really had quite the path going to Evo Japan. You know, not being able to get visas, not being able to exchange currencies. Oh my God. And then he still, I think you were saying, Zareen, that he got to, you know, he actually got to the venue like an hour before the whole thing started and then ended up winning the whole thing. Wow.
Wow, after spending 3 days in airports, that is so crazy. Like, that's insane to me. Like, he spent 3 days traveling through different airports, putting up with the stress of perhaps not even being able to enter Japan or make it to like the city he needed to get to. Gets into the venue an hour before pool start, manages to win and become Evo Japan champion. Like, that is so crazy to me. And he does it all without even complaining a bit about anything that happened in the process. He was probably too busy to, mind you. But man, like, that's a class act right there. And he's like, what, this 19-year-old kid? You know, he didn't have money either because he couldn't exchange money. They didn't accept the currency that he had on him when he was at the airport. So he literally, like, it's such a great struggle, like, story, and I think it's super inspiring, and kudos to him for winning, especially in the grand final, which was super hype. So if you didn't catch it was a huge, huge upset tournament. You know, none of the usual names that we usually see, like none of the Korean players or the Japanese players actually made it to the grand finals. It was a Philippines player named AK who went up against Arslan in the grand final, and it was an awesome story.
I mean, I not only did all of this happen, from what I believe, he even had trouble getting a visa to go to this tournament to begin with, and was asking on Twitter for help with people. I think Jabali ended up helping him out in some way. So he even had more trouble than just these travel issues to be able to compete. But from what I understand, even though like the usual names didn't make it to the finals, everyone still competed in the tournament because they're in Japan. So most of the top Korean and Japanese players still played in there. They just didn't make it. And this kid won the whole thing. I would say that, and we're talking about the other aspect of Evo Japan a little bit, considering like the scope and the competition that he had to go through, this is probably like Pakistan's best, like most successful esports performance like of all time for any player or team that they've ever had from that region. He really did put them on the map for having a championship now.
Yeah, I mean, Zorin, you're, let's say, our resident Tekken expert. Did you know that people play Tekken in Pakistan?
So I actually heard about a little bit about their scene before. They have a strong arcade scene apparently, and this is not the first time Arslan has performed well in a tournament. I can't remember which one it was, but he actually has beaten Ni before in a tournament a couple of months ago. So like, he's not completely new. If you've been following the scene pretty closely or actively, you would have stumbled across his name. I think it was maybe a month ago he put up some promising results, but like, this is his first big like major, I think, where he was kind of really shone and I think put his own name as well as his country and his scene on the map.
It's quite incredible to be able to go through those types of travel woes, get there just in the nick of time. I mean, really, it's like on one hand the universe was working against him, but he was stronger than the universe holding him back. So, props to him. I'm sure he's got a really bright future. Putting Pakistan on the map. It's amazing.
Yeah, it kind of, I don't know, like, it kind of makes you think. Obviously, like, I came from, you know, the FGC in Australia, which is kind of like the scene that's really far away from, you know, the international spotlight, you could say. And it makes you think that how much talent is out there that doesn't necessarily get a chance to shine. But when they go to events like this is like their opportunity to like make it. And yeah, like, hopefully this leads to other opportunities, both for Arslan and for the whole, you know, Pakistani scene in general.
And you can't ever state that the guy who played in the finals was from the Philippines. I don't remember what his name was, either of
AK.
you. Yeah, so I mean, if you probably were asking any Tekken expert or analyst going into the event, I would think most people would say it would be a Japan-Japan final, a Korean-Korean final, a Korean-Japan final, or maybe an American player. Maybe we'll get there somehow. I bet no one would have answered the finals would be Pakistan versus the Philippines. And that's, I think, is generally a good sign. The only issue is that you will really only get these types of results in countries when the host tournament is in Asia, either Korea, Japan, or Southeast Asia. That's why places like that Australian tournament that's run every year for the fighting game scene.
Bam? Battle Arena Melbourne?
No, like I'm thinking, wasn't there another one too?
Ozhado Nationals? Or are you thinking of Shadaloo Showdown? That has not happened for a long time. Yeah. Like they shut that down.
Well, that was probably the best event that Australia had. And when those tournaments would happen, you would get maybe slightly different results because all of the Asian players could then play. Where traditionally in North American and European fighting game tournaments, you have a few Japanese and Korean players that could fly over and then they win the whole thing. And that's like how it goes. But Evo Japan is like one of the rare instances where there's like every top player because it's in Asia. So every Korean, Japanese, Chinese, Southeast Asian player comes and plays. And then you have crazy results because people were beating people probably in round of 16 or 32 or 128 or, you know,
right, that's
256 and whatever. It is Evo after all. And it happens in normal Evo when it's in Vegas. And that's still, I mean, you have like in normal Evo, you have like maybe 50 to 100 Asian players are flying over to play. And that's still pretty crazy. But here, and I don't know how attendance was for like the whole tournament. I know it was pretty shit comparatively to probably what it should have been. It was probably still good.
When I looked at the numbers, I think it was like 6,500 registrations in total, like around that number. So lower than it was last year, but not as like terrible as you might think. I think that's still a solid turn up.
I think it's pretty solid. I mean, I think part of the reason why, let's say, attendance had dropped from last year was probably the move to Fukuoka. Fukuoka, sorry, my Japanese is really bad. You know, it's kind of off the beaten path compared to, you know, having it in Tokyo, but it's also probably a lot cheaper to run an event out there. But yeah, that was probably that is the esports
venue. I mean, from what I heard, there was nothing there near the venue.
Probably not. I don't know. I mean, it's not like when you guys ever gone to TGS and gone all the way out to where that is. Like that's definitely not that barely even Tokyo at all out there.
No, it's very far away. It's like out in the middle of nothing. Kind of like how SCR was in Ontario last year. It's not Tokyo proper, that's for sure.
So last year's EVO lost over $1 million in the financial report that came out afterwards. Part of that was probably why they made some changes this year, like moving it out of a prime location in Tokyo to where the fuck it is now. And how do you guys think it's going to do for them? Do you think this is going to make money? Do you think they're just not going to lose nearly as much wood? Have mattered at all.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they lost money because of like there's a bunch of Japanese laws that make it difficult to monetize events like that. So for example, Evo Japan last year, if I remember correctly, there was no entry fee. It was free to enter the tournaments, unlike Evo in the US, where you pay a $60 registration fee, you pay $10 per game on top of that, etc., etc. Whereas in Japan, I think there's some sort of like gambling laws that prevent you from being able to pay to enter. So like entry is literally free; they can't charge people to enter, which means that they have to make their money back either on sponsorships or on viewership, like licensing of the viewership. So of the feed. So like, I don't know. I think it's really hard for them to be able to monetize. And there was some other thing that I saw online about like Momochi being able to accept the prize money this year because of something else that like to do with the laws.
Really?
I don't know if Ryan, you were able to shed any more light on that.
No, I didn't hear anything about him being able to accept the prize money or not. But yeah, it is true that due to the nature of the gambling laws in Japan is what makes the, let's say, the esports scene. I mean, tournaments with cash prizes and entry fees have been illegal in Japan since the dawn of time. So this is nothing new, and it's part of the reason I would say that Japan is only now starting to have a growing, thriving esports scene. And also probably one of the reasons why Japanese players have consistently over, you know, the course of fighting game history been, let's say, a notch or two above the rest of the world. Because I think that part of the reason why they're willing to share so much information amongst each other is because there was no money on the line versus, you know, versus like out here, you know, for a long time, maybe it's not as much like that anymore, but, you know, people, Americans, North Americans were very apprehensive about sharing strategies and tech and whatnot. But hey, when there's nothing on the line, who cares?
So what you're saying.
But now that's not the case.
What you're saying, Ryan, the solution is to take away all the prize money from the American tournaments to motivate everyone to share information and level each other up.
Yes, except if you took all the prize money out of Street Fighter, there would probably not be enough people left to have the game keep evolving.
So I actually want to talk about more about Evo Japan, so let's get to the meat and potatoes, so to speak.
The meat and potatoes.
of the weekend, you know, the hot story.
The meat and
going
potatoes,
around.
The too hot for
wow,
Twitch.
Wow, chicka, wow, wow, wow.
The too hot for Twitch news of the week. Polygon reports that the Evo Japan stream was taken offline.
Did
as
you actually
Dead
watch
alive.
It? Forget the fucking Polygon reports, since I watched it. Did you watch this, Ryan? Did you watch Evo Japan? Did you see this happen?
I saw the clips afterwards.
Oh, well, okay. So Namco decided to have their little like intro to show off DOA.
That's not Namco. That's I believe it's Koei, Tecmo Koei.
Sorry. Yes.
Leave Namco out of this.
Okay. I forget. DOA is so irrelevant as a game that I just can't remember who makes it. Right now, so I'm sorry about that.
Go on.
Okay.
So they were showing off the game from the developer side, but it was on Evo's stream, and they had control of like that time portion of the broadcast, and they hired two pretty popular women in the Japanese industry. I don't believe they're not in porn. They're
like
models. I don't know.
Gravure models?
Yeah, I think they're gravure models. Yes. And one of them is very known because
gravure?
she does stuff in the fighting game community.
So
I believe
it's kind of like and I don't want to like I'm kind of paraphrasing here. So it's not outright porn. They're not porn actresses. But they do kind of like, you know, sexy photo shoots and like a little bit of fan service, you know, type of content. So, yeah. You know, like they dress kind of, they're scantily dressed and, you know, it's not outright
Patreon
like
Patreon girls.
It's tied in together. They have some really good Patreons.
It's all very
from what I hear, okay?
Content without being outright like porn, basically.
And one of these girls, from what I believe, has already done many things in the fighting game community, and she's a fighting game player, and like she plays the games. But she's a model too, right? And they use, and maybe the both of them are, but I only recognize the one on the left. So. Because I'm a very good reporter, I made sure that as soon as it happened on Twitch, that I would download the video and share it for the gaming community. So, as, of course, the number one esports consultant has the video, which has been since deleted by Evo on the official Evo Twitch channel, so you can't watch it, but you can watch it over on my Twitch link. And Ryan has a link to pull up if we want to watch the video on stream.
Ryan. Get us banned for our
No, it wasn't content that it was removed by Twitch, which is what we're going to talk about in a second. It was content. It was a partnership presentation, and you had the two girls. And from what I understand, I got a translation of the video. And Ryan, you should show the video while we're talking about this, by the way. Because he doesn't. It's in Japanese. We can talk over it. Anyway, that's not the point, Ryan, obviously, of the video. So you can show the video while we're talking. And I understand while they were talking.
Still want to watch again and again.
We have to show the community, okay? So from what I understand, what they're trying to explain DOA's physics and that your tits and ass actually do juggle when you jump up and down. And they were trying to make the developers use these two presenters to try to make the point of why people were asking them to reduce the juggling physics of
the jiggle physics.
The jiggle.
Because of over-sexualizing content and like a whole bunch of reasons. Especially if you're in the West, because Western and Japanese culture is quite different in the way that they view things. So this was a way of their response. So they did a presentation on stage to show that women's tits and ass actually do juggle, and that's why there should be more in the game. And I have to find the whole thing hilariously kind of insane. Just looking at everything that happened. The fact that they did this skit on stage, the fact that they did it obviously with some approval of Evo beforehand to have this like we're doing this. We're taking this time on your channel. Like they had to have known.
Maybe
this isn't a thing that just randomly happened.
Maybe they like phrased it in like a kind of like sneaky way, like, oh, we want to showcase the mechanics of the game with actual physical models on the stage without actually going into detail about how they would do that. Who knows?
Okay. Right? Anyway, so it happened. And then a second video happened when they were showing within the game of Dead or Alive, and then they stopped on a frame.
Yeah.
The frame that they stopped on was I don't know the characters' names, Ryan. Does anyone know Dead or Alive characters? No. No one knows jack shit about fucking Dead or Alive, all right? No, this is a show hosted by two fighting game people and my esports ass, and no one knows a fucking... Can any of you name one Dead or Alive character?
Ayane? Yes, I got one. Yes. I watched the... You know why? Because I watched the Dead or Alive live-action Hollywood movie with Devin Aoki.
Okay.
Anyway.
Okay. So we have to name one character. Anyway, his face is all up in there in this frame, and they focused on the frame for a good 25 seconds.
But I don't get what they were trying to show from... All right. I'm just going to... I'm just gonna lay it out there. Like I really don't see the problem at all with two Japanese models up there demonstrating the IRL jiggle physics. I just, you know, but I also am, you know, I'm a strong believer of, you know, freedom of speech and whatever the antithesis of sexual repression is. So I personally don't see any problem with the first clip. The second clip, you know, again, like I don't, you know, this doesn't, you know, this doesn't offend my sensibilities at all. I'm just kind of curious. I would love to know, like, from like the DOA side, you know, kind of what the, you know, what the logic was, because I can see why people might take it the wrong way, or maybe, you know, this was not something that Evo really felt comfortable with that particular one. I could see the hesitation.
But fortunately for all of us as outsiders through this whole thing, our favorite fighting game community Illuminati member, Mr. Wizard, came in, shut the streams down. They made a Markman apologize on stream for not having content for Evo's core values, while Tasty Steve just like sat there like... like not looking at the camera, not saying anything, just like in total fake disgust over there, while Mark Mann is like trying to not laugh while saying this into the camera. And immediately, Mr. Wizard became the pariah for the community. It was already fun, like it was already like understandable if you were on the outside and you were like kind of offended or you thought like they took it too far, as maybe with the second clip, Ryan. But then for Mr. Wizard to come in and be like, this is an Evo's core values, knowing like the fighting game community and who they are and what they're about, and they're definitely all about some ass and titties in general. What did he think exactly was going to happen with that? And I definitely participated, because even I'm like, come on, bro. Like, fighting games are all about either, like, super gory Mortal Kombat breaking bones and skulls and people's eyes being impaled through their back of their head and shit, or extremely, like, sexualized anime fighting games or whatever, and real life fighting games like DOA, like the game that was on display to begin with. So what do you think was gonna happen, Mr. Wizard?
I wonder if like him saying that or making that tweet in particular was because it seemed like a very PR kind of line, right?
Yeah.
So it might have been his kind of damage control to please sponsors and try and convince them, like, hey, we're not usually like this, or Evo is not usually like this. Therefore, you know, the phrasing that he used, core values, might have been a way to kind of save face in that moment with what had happened. But I also feel like him doing that kind of drew more attention to the whole thing than had he just left it as it was. And, like, everyone sees it, laughs about it, moves on, right? But now it's like this whole meme, so...
Yeah, it definitely seemed like sort of preemptive damage control, and I probably agree that cutting the whole thing and then making it a you know, an issue probably drew a lot more attention to it than what would have happened otherwise. But who knows? In a parallel universe, I mean, here's the thing. I can certainly empathize with Evo and the entire production team, because as we experienced last week, I started to feel the heat when Rod is dropping F-bombs, quoting Dead Mouse. So I'm like, oh, do I cut the stream? So it's a really, I can certainly appreciate the delicacy of the situation. I mean, we're here in this really sensitive political climate, and you know, you don't want to ruffle too many feathers. So I understand why they, you know, made that decision. I think the real winner here, though, is Tecmo, because now DOA probably got way more burn than they would have gotten before had this not happened. So I think that maybe,
because as we've mentioned, no one gives a shit about Dead or Alive.
I do feel sorry for the Dead or Alive players, like, because, like, you know, I made that tweet about, like, oh, DOE is a very serious competitive fighting game, and, like, apparently people got mad about that, but I do feel sorry
perfect
for the...
Carl. Perfect Legend was not too pleased with Zareen's tweet.
I do feel sorry for the players who are like, oh, like, you know, this is actually a good game, it has good mechanics if you just look beyond, you know, the fan service, because they're all like, this game needs to be taken seriously, and Tecmo Koei and the marketing department's like, titties, like, you know, like, everyone look at the fan service. And it's just like this complete disconnect between the publisher of the game and the community who wants it to be taken seriously. So it's like, nobody wins.
I mean, there's gotta be some people that like DOA because they keep making them. And everyone has new and improved jiggle physics. So, I mean, clearly they're responding to the market demands. And maybe this is just not... Here's the thing. I guess we'll know for sure whether or not everything is kosher if the new Dead or Alive is at Evo Vegas. Because, yeah. I don't know.
I would think it will be.
Yeah. So, I mean, really, now I would love to see the I can't wait to, if it is added to Evo, it'll be interesting to see what the registration numbers are for DOA 6 versus other DOA titles that have been included at Evo throughout the years. Because my prediction is that DOA 6 will have a slight uptick in players after, you know, this debacle. But I really, really empathize with the Evo staff, because this is... it's so tricky, you know, because you also don't want to be caught. You also don't want to be caught in the reverse situation, right? Where this, you know, incident, this paid advertisement happens, and then next thing you know, Kotaku's got a story talking about how Evo is supporting, you know, whatever, sexualized gaming. I don't even know. I don't even know what these people call it, but. Trust me, if you've never played, if you haven't played Gal's Panic 2, you don't know sexualized gaming, okay? So.
I don't even know what game you just mentioned.
Exactly. But... exactly. But.
Have you thought about, like, all the sexualized things that might have been happening with a picture of your head over the last, like,
several
years? I don't know why. That right.
Did you even bring that up?
But, like, there's so many different versions of PogChamp. That, like, you know, if I were you, I would be really freaked out of what people were doing with my head.
Oh my god.
Do you ever feel that way?
I think you might be, if our audience was bigger, I'm sure there would be some really creative fan fiction writers that, you know, are going to add this to the next chapter of their, you know, esports romance novel.
That's a thing. But no, it doesn't. I'd totally read it.
Oh well, maybe it is now. But yeah, I don't know. It's just funny. Like, I think we're actually going to be entering this cycle where once everybody sort of comes to their collective societal senses about, you know, this sort of massive need for political correctness, I think we're actually about to head into this cycle of the opposite of that, where everybody is just putting out R-rated, not for children, not safe for work content, to just get all of this political correctness repression off of us, you know, similar to, you know, in the 60s and 70s, you know, the sexual revolution was sort of like the counterbalance to all of the repression that had happened in previous decades. So I, for one, am looking forward to the increase in sexualized games.
Ryan, I have a follow-up question. What do you think about dudes?
Oh, this is going to be a good one, guys. Just wait.
What do you think about dudes saying PogChamp or Poggers when they come?
You know, I actually heard it. I think I was on the
what?
I was on the Trainwrecks show, and like one of the guests asked one of the other guests a question, and then his response, he was just like, "Oh, huh, Pog. Whoa, Pog. Hmm, interesting." And I was like, I had to. Yeah, I sort of did a double take. Yeah, it's a thing.
But what about like a long pog, you know, like a really emotional pog?
That one I haven't heard. Oh, so you mean if somebody was like, oh, pog.
Well, I'm thinking, you know, well, when the guy is blowing his load, I'm thinking nerds everywhere screaming out pog to their girlfriends, and this is what's causing like emotional problems between real relationships right now and the younger generation.
That's
I don't know how you even come up with thinking about these things, Ron, but I'm impressed. So let's move on to the next topic, because we only have so much time to talk today.
Alright, moving on.
We've been doing so good though.
Okay, let's see. What's coming up next? Viewership.
Overwatch League, do we want to talk about that?
All right, here we go. ESC.watch esports charts is reporting the first week of Overwatch League 2019 versus Overwatch League 2018. These are some pretty interesting numbers. We got nearly 300,000 peak concurrent viewers, a little over 200,000 average viewers, and 6.6 million hours watched compared to last year, 436,000 peak, 235,000 average viewers, and 5.7 million hours watched. So slight upticks, slight downticks, but it's pretty solid, I would say, if these numbers are real.
They are the publicly available ones. So when you're scraping Twitch, the ESC Watch platform does a very good job of scraping the public available data for Twitch, which is all we have for all the data that we have anyway. So it's generally pretty reliable. As someone who's been tracking the Overwatch League numbers some last season and this season pretty intently, the peak concurrents were definitely down more than over 100,000. It hit over 400K last year, under 300K this year. Average concurrents are down 40. And yeah, there was a little bit of an uptick in hours watched, but peak concurrent
and average viewers. It's almost an extra million hours watched.
There were more games played, so there were just the days were longer and there were more games played overall, so there are going to be more hours watched. And in some cases, maybe for Activision Blizzard's sales team, that's actually a better metric for them to sell stuff than peak concurrent or average concurrent. But I think to most Twitch like viewers and fans, and even some of the media like myself or industry people, we still kind of consider peak concurrent and average concurrent as kind of where they're at. So last year, Overwatch League definitely had the factor of being a debut thing. Like, everyone wants to see what the Overwatch League is and what Blizzard's going to do. And this year doesn't have as much of, that type of newness factor of wanting to tune in and see what this is. Now, I know that everyone wants to grow. And I definitely don't think the stream is getting bigger. Like, Overwatch League Season 2 is not bigger than Overwatch Season 1. From my eye test of just Twitch alone. Now, they have gotten four new Chinese franchises, and you know there's like a billion fucking people in China, where literally every major esport event has like an extra 90 million concurrents because China is insane. And one, we can't verify, but two, it actually is insane over there. Yes, they are exaggerating numbers and they're not verifiable, but they have a billion people and like everybody plays video games. And so they watch a lot of shit. So the extra four Chinese franchises alone are going to give Overwatch a ton of more viewers, even though Twitch is down and Western viewership is down. And that is because the game is in a totally fucking garbage-ass shit fucking state. So Activision Blizzard, like, the marketing department and the people that have run Overwatch League have done a great job considering Overwatch the game is fucking awful at the moment.
Well,
and even the professional play is terrible.
Well, maybe that's why viewership is down, because less people are playing, because
you're right. So for even viewership to be where it is, which is still over 200,000 concurrent, I think is actually pretty good considering how shit the game is right now. The viewership to me is good considering how shit it is, the game. Damn, even though it's down from season one. That's how I put it.
And how many teams are playing in this season's 20. League versus, and how many was last season?
12.
Okay, so we have 8 extra teams, but they are playing less games overall.
Yes.
Like, per team. Okay. Yes.
But there were more teams overall, so there are still more overall total games for the broadcast.
Got it.
So the broadcast is really fucking long now. It's like 7 hours a day for 4 days a week.
I mean, I went to Overwatch League last weekend. It was the debut weekend, and checked it out. And, from an event standpoint, they did super well. The venue sold out. There was, like, people lined up to watch the game. Like, it was, from that view, it looked like they had been super successful at putting on Overwatch League. The opening, like, weekend for the season was really great. Everything kicked off really, really well. So that all the production side of stuff, like they're still doing an amazing job, and kudos to Blizzard for continuing to do that. I do wonder about the drop in viewership and how that makes teams feel, especially given that they were paying like what, 10 to 15 million per new franchise spot. The fact that the viewership or the peak viewership has dropped compared to last season might be something that would cause a little bit of worry to them.
Well, you know, it really just depends through how they are selling the league to, because all that matters, it doesn't matter as much as like the fan speculation of how things are going. It's much more to the investors and what they're looking for the, all the money they spent, all the teams and all the money they spent on the league. So because Activision Blizzard were probably underselling season one for gonna have horrible viewership, and then season one ended up so well, they were probably all really excited by the viewership last year, and they probably didn't set as high expectations even for season two. So more than likely, even though I think Overwatch is in real, there's real concern there, and I definitely think viewership is down because there is concern for the game, it still might be doing like really good for the teams and the partners and even the sponsors. Like, I have no idea. Maybe Coca-Cola loves this viewership, and it doesn't matter that people that know the game say it's down and that there are reasons to be concerned. But all they see is that it's a pretty good number anyway. So who gives a shit? Yep. That's very possible, I think. Well, I mean, so we could actually transition a little bit into, like, the other topic of... this is my homie, my boy, Papa Jeff, Jeff Kaplan, lead game director over at Blizzard on Overwatch. My buddy, we've known each other for a long time. I've sent 24 eggplants to his office before. That's a real thing that's happened. Wait. I've had a Blizzard employee.
Wait, what?
I'm sorry.
Deliver eggplants to him.
Why eggplants?
What?
Is this like is this how you flirt?
Is that a dick joke?
Rod?
No, it is not a dick. Ryan. That is really naughty.
Come on. We've all used the eggplant emoji before.
No, I've been very PG this whole show, and now you're just going to bring the eggplant out of nowhere. It's just
That doesn't reflect his core values.
It doesn't reflect my core values. It's really catching me off guard. Thank you, Zareen. Thank you. But to answer your question, no, it was not. Back in the early days of Overwatch, when the game was starting to first be competitive, Jeff, Papa Jeff, you know, lead game designer, the one that makes most of the decisions, he wanted you to be able to play any composition you want within the game, and so to make it so you can each pick the same character. Like, there's no limit for how many times one team could have the same character, and he thought, you know what, it'll be fine, because it's a game where you can switch. It's unlike, you know, a MOBA where you can't switch in the middle of the game, and people will just switch to all different heroes. Well, early on, not even related to what we're going on, but it's a great example of, like, his philosophy. We told him, as people that played the game, you know, 8 to 10 hours a day, I was playing 8 to 10 hours a day as, like, a competitive player, and talking to all the professional players, because I hosted the Discord for professional Overwatch with every single pro player in the game from Europe and North America, all congregating at one time. And we all agreed that if you don't change the game, we're going to play 2-2-2 because we've identified the best characters in the game already, and you just put two of them in the lineup because it's always better than one of something else. And that was the meta for like the first year. The 2-2-2 compositions changed, but there was two of whatever character was OP at the time, you had two of them in the lineup. And sometimes you had two different twos. And sometimes there were even three, there were even main lineups of two Tracer, two Winston, two Lucio. And that was the main lineup. And we had to yell at him for a year to change it. And he did not do it. At the very beginning of Overwatch Esports, like the first major tournament, in the very first game, not only did people play these compositions, but on one of the maps, all they did was go six Divas and six Tracers to stall out the game for 15 minutes so the game would never end. And finally, after that, they switched it. After a year of telling them why they should do it, very logically, of how no one is going to play how they want to, it took like a total PR disaster on the main broadcast of teams abusing the shit out of the game for them to finally make the decision. And that type of philosophy leads us to where we are today in terms of like how Papa Jeff, my good buddy, views this fucking video game. And the most latest thing that he mentioned, he made a posting on the official Blizzard Battle.net forums to reply to some posts a few days ago. He talks about how he didn't think that people would main characters in Overwatch, and that it was really surprising to him that people were going to play only single characters throughout the duration of the game, and that it, that has affected the way that they designed the game, and they didn't think it was going to be like that, and so, like, our bad, we're looking at it. And all it did was make my fucking brain explode as I'm having flashbacks to, like, the early times of Overwatch, trying to explain Overwatch, you know, the rank system, one hero limit, you know, the custom servers, like, all the scoreboard, all types of shit. And it's like he disregards years, as you can mention, Ryan, of not only like League of Legends and Dota play, where people main one fucking hero. One tricking was a terminology before Overwatch existed, but they've been doing it in fighting games for like 25 years. There have been, Daigo's been playing, and Alex Valle have been playing fucking Ryu. Other than like when Ryu was really awful and they had to play other characters in different games, which is understandable because they're trying to play top tier and whatever. But in general, there are examples all the time of people playing one fucking hero, and Jeff Kaplan, Papa fucking Jeff, doesn't understand this, and this is just yet another reason why this fucking game, it has less viewers for season 2 than it does season 1.
Okay. Noted. Well said. But I got to put my esports journalist hat on for a moment.
Okay.
Because I only have one question. Why did you send 24 eggplants if it wasn't a dick joke?
Okay. So when we were going through, like, trying to tell Blizzard about, like, why they should make the game one hero limit, for some reason in the Discord, people made one hero limit, remove 2CP, which is the assault game mode, which everyone hates, and then we put the eggplant emoji after. The eggplant emoji was supposed to represent fixing the game. The eggplant emoji somehow ended up being a meme within the Discord, so that whenever you said, like, fix one HL, remove 2CP, and then people put an eggplant after. And then it became a meme, and there people started tweeting about it, just random eggplants. In the early days of Overwatch Esports broadcast, there was, like, an eggplant on the stream randomly, and people wouldn't know what it was. It was like an inside joke to the Discord. And so then I worked it out with a Blizzard employee who I wouldn't name, and she dropped off 21 eggplants while he wouldn't revert it to one hero limit to remind him that he needed to do it.
Did he get it, though? Because he obviously is not part of your Discord and, you know, like, all that stuff.
Well, some of the lead designers of the game are still in there, but when the Discord first started, all they were in there. Jeff Kaplan was in there under an anonymous name. And, like, they were in there, but we were just so kind of ruthless with him in the beginning that they left. And they decided that, like, they didn't want to listen. I mean, I talked to, like, early on at PAX East when Overwatch just came out with the Aaron, I forget his name, but he's, like, the other lead guy along with Jeff. And I told him all the concerns that we had and how, like, they're going to run into these problems if they don't make major changes to the game, like, later on. And we're really 3 years on now. And they haven't made, like, some of those significant changes. And I am 100% sure that is why we're here now for the game being fucked up.
Okay. Damn. Just wondering. It's pretty meta. I can appreciate the level of dedication that you invested in improving this game.
Oh, yeah. Well, it hasn't worked.
Damn.
So, you know what, Ryan? Maybe if you put in that same level of effort, Street Fighter V would be better than where it is now.
Look at.
Have you been? Why haven't you sent 21 eggplants to Capcom's office?
Look at Rod. There are not enough eggplants
in the world.
In the world. There's just not. But I mean, I guess I just.
Well, maybe if you were showing your eggplant more, Capcom would have done something by now. Sorry, I don't know why you're laughing.
No, I'm just. You know, it just goes against the core values of, you know, what we.
Of the show
present.
Here.
Yeah, so. That's a. I don't think that would happen, but, you know, good effort. Good effort, Rod.
Yeah, good effort, Rod. So if you sent 21 eggplants last time and it really didn't do the trick, I mean, what do you send now?
There were 21 characters, by the way, if you're wondering why. There were only 21 characters in Overwatch, and it was supposed to represent you can't have more than one character. So okay. There was
the meta is just so vast in this. This is why I didn't want to do the show.
It's legit. It was legit. I'll find a picture for you before the show is over. You can see this.
Your eggplant was in the right place.
I'm glad you shared that story. Thank you, Rod Slasher, for.
Yeah, I would really like it if the the game was fixed rather than having to send eggplants.
The solution is to send more eggplants.
Yeah, now you got to send like 20, what, 28, 32? I don't know. I'm just throwing out numbers.
Okay, wait. Before we get off the topic, check the Skype message.
This is the actual eggplant. Oh, it's a photo of Jeff Kaplan receiving the eggplants.
Yeah, this Shut is not.
Oh, oh my God. So each one has a picture of the character drawn on it.
Yeah, oh yeah. We took each character. Yeah, there's also drawings on each of the individual eggplants that represent.
That's actually amazing.
One hero. And there is a thumbs up of
with
him.
Love with love from the Overwatch Discord channel.
Yeah, which is that my him? Discord.
That's him.
Yeah.
That is Papa Jeff.
I have proof. Anyone that wanted to see proof.
Oh my God. The world could always use more eggplants.
Wow. If you don't play Overwatch, that's a spin on the line that Tracer says in the opening cinematic. She says the world could always use more heroes. So.
Oh my gosh. Okay, now I have to ask, right. Is this your artwork on the eggplants?
It is not.
Wow, you made someone else go to the effort of dropping all that on like every single eggplant?
I have sources everywhere.
I hope you paid them.
Wow. I mean, that's an amazing arc for like a 2.5 year practical joke. What a payoff.
Thank you. I try.
I'm impressed with your ability to I'm impressed with your activism.
Yeah, maybe we should all take a leaf out of Slash's book and do the same for the games that we think need fixing.
There's going to be a shortage of eggplants quite soon. We're going to have to rotate, you know.
Sometimes. I've got more eggplants than the entire fighting game community combined.
Okay. All Speaking right. of which, the fighting game community, we have next up the topic that a lot of people have been talking about. Let's see. Whew,
right,
this one.
Yes. Oh, yeah. This is a good one. This
so
is
much drama.
Good one.
So, Summit, Beyond the Summit, who host fun, I guess you could say, tournaments for various games and esports, you know, they make this whole big deal out of lots of content. They are announced that they are hosting a summit for Mortal Kombat 11, I believe. And the way summits usually work, if you don't follow them, is that a bunch of pro players get invited, and then the rest of the players who make their way to the tournament have to get voted in by fans. So I want to say prominent Mortal Kombat 11 player was not invited to the summit, or he did not receive an invitation directly to the tournament, and he was very angered about this and took to Twitter to leak the entire list of players who were invited. Now, normally Beyond the Summit releases like teasers and kind of like leads up to the full announcement of like which players are actually invited to the tournament, and it's this whole thing. So this guy has just come out and kind of shit all over that and has just leaked the entire list, and there is just salt everywhere. It's just salt left and right. There's like salt falling from the sky. There are people angry that he leaked the list. There are people angry about who's actually invited. It's just crazy right now. But I want to hear what you guys think about it. Ryan, you probably recognize a lot of the names on the list as well.
Sure, yeah. Let's go through the let's go through the tweet. Sonic Fox, Dragon, DJT, Chris G, Tyrant, King, Hayate, Tekken Master, Foxy, and Scar. No KP commentary. I'm assuming that's Katana Prime. Our Evo champ isn't in, and Chris G slash Tyrant R. Don't see the problem, question mark, LOL. No qualifiers and six people get voted in. Voting eligibility will require some type of NRS results. Well,
I was going to say the chat does bring up a good point. Chris G is there to bring in the female audience into the tournament. I think that's a solid reason, honestly. I'm liking the diversity.
Dude,
Long hair to short hair participants.
Oh my goodness.
Chris is a super strong NRS player in his own right. I can see why people are mad, I guess. But here's the thing. People are always going to be mad about this type of thing. People are always going to be mad that they didn't get picked, and this guy got picked, and this guy didn't. But here's the reality. It's not all about in-game skill anymore, right? Like, if you want, like, let's be real, right? Like, Beyond the Summit is, despite the fact that it's in a, it takes place in a house, it's still a very, very, very high budget production, as far as I can tell. You know, this is not exactly,
yeah, it is.
It's not exactly
paid stuff.
Yeah, it's not exactly like big Overwatch League, you know, level of production, but it's also not, you know, your local tournament. So when you have these sort of big budget productions, you need to make sure that your sponsors are going to get the numbers that, you know, you had promised them. And part of the numbers, you know, are going to be, part of the numbers are going to depend on the high profile players that are, you know, invited into the event, such as, you know, Chris G, Sonic Fox, et cetera, even though obviously, you know, Sonic Fox, of course, you know, would be in there. So, you know, looking at the, you know, I mean, these are the things. So, I don't know, the moral of the story. Oh, and also, you know what can't be discounted either is the relationships that the players have with either the developers or the relationships that players have with the people running the event. So,
you know, this is a bigger issue, I think, because it is the fighting game community, and the fighting game community really prides itself on, like, getting in without top player privilege, which is always a thing that's talked about more within the fighting game community as opposed to other communities, because, you know, it's all about being the best and beating the best, and sure, invitationals are generally frowned upon. But I've always been, I mean, we spoke about this like a long time ago when Street Fighter 4 was first turning into esports, or we were trying to get it to go that way. I mean, I always thought an invitational with, like, you know, when Daigo and Justin were first getting huge, if you created a 16-player invitation with all those guys back in 2010, it probably would have did really well. It's just not how fighting game tournaments work. It's about showing up and getting into a bracket, and maybe you'll get a good seed, maybe, depending on how, like, the tournament works, and then you just beat everyone. And esports-like concepts haven't really translated as much, but I think the Summit has shown that you can make it work for fighting game community, and it's worked with Summit of Power, and it's worked with, you know, the other games, Smash, that they do, so I think this is going to do really well, even if the invite list is not.
I mean, there are also six other slots where people get voted in through. So, like, there is room for, like, you know, the popular people, like, the popular, like, personalities in the scene who do have followings and can bring viewership to the tournament. Although there is one thing he said which kind of did raise eyebrows for me, and that was the fact that their Evo champion didn't get invited. So I don't know what the story is there
or what
the context is there, but that is an interesting one to kind of exclude from the invite list.
The MK10 Evo champion.
I don't know if it's MK10 or whoever won Injustice last year. Maybe someone in the chat could clarify. But yeah, I mean, like, there are six other slots available for people to get voted in. And then didn't he follow up with another tweet saying that he fears that popular players who don't even play the game will get voted in based solely on their clout?
Something. Well, maybe he should get more fucking popular then. There are other more popular Mortal Kombat players that are known because they've done, like, social media through the NRS scene that have worked their way up, and they're not all named Sonic Fox. There are other people, so maybe he should do a better job.
I think the only logical step for I would actually like to see this guy, Simplicity Tweety, Tommy Tweety. I want to see him run a really, really fabulous voting campaign for himself and sort of run on this platform of,
look, oh, for sure.
I, Tommy Tweety, am a man of the people. I leaked this news. I am running on this platform of freedom of information. And, you know, we need to abolish this whole, you know, process and make everything about, you know, qualifiers and previous results and whatnot. And I think it would be fantabulous if he made it in because of the sheer irony of them at this point probably doing their best to keep him out of things. But I think it'd be far more interesting if he got voted his way in.
That would be. I mean, Beyond the Summit is probably really pissed off at him right now for doing what he did. So even it would be even more, I guess, of an interesting situation if he did get voted in after this.
I mean, he did say, I mean, his follow-up tweet, shout outs to everyone who said has already said they'll vote me into Summit. I've put so much work into these games. Very, very grateful. I'll be on my grind. So
great.
I hope it works out. If he gets voted in and then actually wins, oh my god,
that would be the best.
Oh my god, that would be the best. Because here's the thing.
I mean, I'll vote for him. I'll vote for him.
I think you actually have to pay to vote in the Summit. Is that
shut
correct?
Shut up! No, you don't. Really?
Yeah. That's how they make money. Like, they make money off. You need to spend money on the store and buy t-shirts and, like, merch to accumulate vote points that you can then put towards voting for the players that you want.
Oh my god. I mean, that that, for whatever reason, that triggers me more than the rest of
it. I can't believe you are unaware of this. This is how it works. Like, that's how the Dragon Ball FighterZ Summit worked as well. Like, literally, you spend money on their store, buy, like, merch, or, like, you pay to, like, subscribe to their channel, like, you sub or whatever, and then you get the points that you can use to put towards voting for the player you want to get in. So you might get, like, a few votes for free, but then all the rest, if you want to keep on, like, supporting your homie or whatever, you got to spend money.
Look at Zorin. I only follow esports tournaments of the highest competitive integrity. And I will not stand for something that will be that where large political donations can influence the, you know, the competitors. I mean, really, at this point, I would recommend that all of these players that did not get voted in, the Tweeties, the Perfect Legends, these guys out here need to start a political political activist committee, like a, you know, the type of organization, the type of nonprofit organization that funds political candidates. And you need to go out there, and you need to rally support, and you need to sell.
Talk to the people.
Yeah, you need to sell. you need to get all these donations, and then you need to buy as many T-shirts on credit cards that you that you possibly can. Max out everybody. That's part of it. Max out everybody's credit limit. Wait for summit to happen, and then boom, chargebacks.
You know what, Ryan? Ryan is definitely right. We cannot stand for this. Just give me my bouncy tatas, and we'll be all good.
And on that note,
the hand action really sells it for me. I think that's
You're gonna get
We're gonna get a 30-day ban on Twitch, dude. Be careful.
You can't. I don't know what this is, but it must be some sort of.
Are you sure?
It must be inappropriate.
Something else.
Must be inappropriate. Anyways, thank you all so much for joining us today. It was a lot of fun. We talked about a lot of esports, and I think we really got to the bottom of some opportunities there are for activism in esports. Number one, send more eggplants. Number two,
yep.
Chargebacks on merchandise purchased for Beyond the Summit. Just kidding. Don't do that. This is all just... These are all just jokes. Anyways, we gotta go. Zorin, what slasher?
No, Zorin, okay. Go first.
Zorin, where do people go for more Zorin?
You can follow me on Twitter. I am at Zorin. That's at Zorine. And on Twitch and YouTube, I am Team Zorin. And on Instagram as well, Team Zorin. Just one word.
All right, Slasher, where do people go for the world's number one esports consultant?
I just want to let everyone know that the Shanghai Dragons are now 0-42. They have lost 42 straight games. They have never won once during last season, and they have already lost twice this season. Reeling pulling for 0-80. Hope everyone's with me.
Hey, well, sometimes you gotta cheer for the underdogs. Everybody, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Untitled Esports Show. We'll be back next week, same bat, somewhat similar bat time, same bat channel. Thank you guys so much. Hit the follow button, like, subscribe, all that good stuff. My name is Gutex. Follow me on the Twitters, Instagrams, at Gutex. Thanks for watching, guys. Bye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.